You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
I've never one time worried about my job. Not, I promise you, not one time. So, you know, I wish we'd kind of move on because it kills us in recruiting.
So that was Arkansas coach Sam Pittman after the game Saturday when the Razorbacks defeated Louisiana Tech 35-14 to clinch bowl eligibility. Look, if you've listened to our show or read our website, you know that we've been pretty consistent saying if they get to a bowl game, the expectation is Sam Pittman's going to be back next year as Arkansas's coach. And so I think that this pretty much solidified it. Ethan Westerman here with me. Ethan, he sounded like a coach after the game who, again, I mean, like he said, he's never worried about his job security. He feels very comfortable and, you know, I guess secure in the fact that he's going to be back.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we've been saying. It seems like that's going to be the case. I think he sounds to me like a coach who's ready to kind of move on from it and ready to get some hip surgery.
This is not a year that's a normal year when it comes to hot seat. And I don't think that the sites that you know, make their money off of all of this speculation have quite caught on to that. You know, in the past, if you're not having – look at what happened to Jimbo Fisher last year. They beat Mississippi State 51-10, and he was fired the next day and paid $76 million to go away. That kind of crap ain't happening this year. Not even remotely close to that. And that's why you see athletic directors like Scott Strickland come out and say that Billy Napier is going to be our coach next year. I think Baylor made a similar announcement about Dave Aranda. I don't think this is going to be a year where you see a whole lot of movement, at least in the Power Four level, because of the size of the buyouts and the coming house settlement that's going to add $20-plus million a year in revenue share, plus several million more in new athletic scholarships at all of these programs. None of them are going to want to take on these big buyouts this offseason. Now, you are seeing a lot of movement at the Group of Five level, but the buyouts at that level, number one, are not as big, and the revenue share at that level is not going to be as expensive as it is in the Power Four. And so I think you just got to reset your expectations for what this offseason is going to look like, whether it be you know, Brian Kelly at LSU, would he have gotten fired in the past? Probably not, but I could have seen it maybe. Brent Venables at Oklahoma, there were people that were wanting him gone. And you just go on and on down the list. Will there be a Power Four school that makes a move this year? Maybe. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that none of them are going to make a move. But the fact that we haven't seen any moves in season certainly I think is telling. And you know, you've also got the earlier signing date this year where I feel like if these teams were going to make a move, for the most part, they would have made a move by now.
Yeah, it's just I don't remember a season where it's never been this quiet this late in the year with the coaching. Like, normally there's at least one firing, I feel like. I think that's just a foreshadowing of what's to come, that it's going to continue to be quiet. It would surprise me if there's not at least one that opens, but it'll probably be a situational thing where it makes a lot of sense where it happens, and maybe there's a lower buyout and, you know, other things going on to make it a little more feasible. But, yeah, I expect, especially in the SEC, it's going to be a little bit quieter this offseason.
And it was a good weekend for coaches who have been on the hot seat. Venables beat Oklahoma. Brian Kelly beat Vanderbilt and got done with the, you know, the three-game losing streak that LSU had been on.
Napier.
You had Napier beating Ole Miss. Who did I just mention a second ago? I mentioned another coach, and I'm forgetting, not Pittman, but, well, anyway, we'll get back to it. But, you know, but the point being that coaches who, you know, there had been that, oh, Hugh Freeze, I didn't mention him, yeah. But that was the other one on my mind. You know, they beat Texas A&M. So all these coaches who there have been this speculation about, warranted or not, their teams all got big wins over the weekend. That shook up the SEC bowl picture. We're going to talk about that and go into depth on that a little bit later and how Arkansas falls in the pecking order. But this was a wild, wild weekend in the SEC.
Yeah, it was. And, I mean, it was one of those weekends that I'm telling you, when you go into one thinking that there's not maybe the great matchups that you know, steal all your attention for the day, it was the weekend where you check a score in the third quarter, like, wait, I need to start watching that. It was one of those weekends. I mean, it was entertaining from the 11 a.m. window all the way to the end. I mean, till the end of I stopped watching after A&M Auburn. I know Cal, somebody was still going on. So the end for me was A&M, Texas A&M, or A&M, Auburn.
The last down of football I watched was about 1:25 in the morning, Colorado State and Fresno State.
Well, that is, don't ever call me a sicko again. That's nasty.
Yeah, you're right. It really was. Anyway, let's move on. Arkansas and Louisiana Tech, the Razorbacks win 35-14. We said it on Friday that it felt like this was a big betting line, a 23.5 favorite, 23.5 point favorite that Arkansas was. They failed to cover it. But the game, as typically happens, I don't know that it really played out quite the way I thought it would. I thought it would be a game where you didn't have a whole lot of possessions because both teams were going to run the ball. Well, that assumes that both teams are going to run the ball well. And neither of them ran the ball very well in the first half. Louisiana Tech never ran the ball well. I mean, their best runs were kicker left and punter right. I mean, you take away those two special teams fakes, and they ran for 6 yards on 31 carries. Arkansas found some success running the ball late. That made a difference in the game. But Arkansas, they win by 21. They were never really, after they scored that first touchdown in the second quarter, you know, they got another one pretty quickly afterward. And they were never in danger of losing the game. But, again, it was one of those games where they're playing one of these teams that you feel like they're way superior than, and it takes them a while to kick things into gear, very similar to what we saw against Liberty, what we saw against Rice, what we saw against Missouri State, what we saw against UAB earlier this year. And I think that people are happy they won, but probably a little frustrated with at least the way they started.
Yeah, honestly, if you subtract the first quarter, Arkansas did – about what it, I think people expected. But that first quarter was just so, it was just bad football for both sides. It was just an ugly game. So it just felt like once Arkansas started running the ball a little bit better and leaned on it a little bit more, to be honest, they started having some more success. You look at the final score, and it's 35-14. And if you track what Louisiana Tech, how their season's gone, I mean, it was – you know, I don't know if you call – it's not going to be an impressive win for anybody over them at this point. But, I mean, Arkansas handled them better than any team has, which I don't know if that's saying much again. But it is – I mean, it was a 23.5 point spread, and they won by 21. So I guess they kind of met expectations in that game, but it didn't feel like it, like you said. I mean, the first quarter just was so ugly that it kind of took away from what happened the rest of the game. But – they did what they needed to do. The defense played well, good for a second consecutive week. So some positives to take away from it, definitely some negatives. The flat starts at home are just such a common trend at this point that it gets to where you wonder if/when that changes. Because, I mean, even their wins this year, all of them at home, I mean, UAB, Tennessee, and La Tech, none of those were great first quarters for Arkansas.
It wasn't an efficient game for Arkansas offensively. They ended up having 13 countable possessions and just 5 touchdowns in those 13 possessions. Very similar numbers to when they played Oklahoma State earlier this year. I think they were 5 scores, you know, so 31 points, and I think it was 14 possessions over at Oklahoma State, and that included a couple of them in overtime. So this offense, they worry me when they play teams that can play defense. Now, Missouri this week, Missouri has not been a very strong defensive team, but I will say the one thing that Missouri does that I think is worth watching is that they rush the passer really well. I heard Shane Beamer talking about this a couple of weeks ago when South Carolina played Missouri. He said that defensive front is really hard to pass protect against. And so that's something that's worth watching this weekend. Pass protection was okay against Louisiana Tech, 1 sack. It did end up being kind of your classic Taylen Green sack where, you know, he turns about an 8-yard sack into 13. But you know, he played pretty well. There were some protection breakdowns where he was able to scramble with it, had a couple of touchdowns that were obviously big plays. Kind of hard to believe he had the longest touchdown run by an Arkansas quarterback since Matt Jones 20 years ago. That was the Matt Jones play where he ran it for 72 against Ole Miss, and then he dunked it through the goalpost at the end. So that was the longest touchdown run by an Arkansas quarterback since then. Green, how would you analyze what you saw from him?
Kind of more of the same. Just a really bad misses and really big highlight plays. It's just, you know, he'll bail you out with the spectacular and then leave you. It's like he makes his own mess and then has to clean it up for the rest of the game. And that's just kind of what happened again Saturday. I think that that first quarter was just, I mean, there was not a single person, I don't think, in the stadium that wasn't wondering if Malachi Singleton was about to come in. I mean, that's just how it felt. And then he comes out the second quarter, and the first drive of the second quarter, I believe, is the one where Andrew Armstrong fumbled it.
Fumbled. So
it was a short possession, but it was one of those type of possessions where it's like, okay, that gives him still – that wasn't Taylen Green's fault, so give him another drive. And then the next drive he puts together, you know, I think it was like 11 play, 80-yard or something. It was a long drive. And then from there, he was fine. It was just, you know, he had his head-scratching moments. He had his interception. He had his just not even looking at a receiver. And then all of a sudden, he's fine. He still had some misses throughout the rest of the game. But once his legs get involved, too, it opens up everything, mm-hmm. I feel like. So it was just kind of more of the same.
Arkansas's first four drives, 5 plays for 20 yards, 3 plays for 3, 5 plays for 1, 3 plays for negative 14. They got to learn to start better. They got to start these games off better. All right, we got some Pittman clips to play for you here. This one actually kind of finishes the clip that we played off the top. This is him talking about his job security, and this is we'll just play that plate.
Am I happy that we are bowl eligible? Yes, for everybody in the building and that staff besides me. I'm never worried about that. Still don't. I'm going to be fine one way or the other, but I'm going to fight like hell for the University of Arkansas the entire time that I'm the head coach.
So Pittman obviously talking about being bowl eligible there. We'll play a little bit more about what he had to say about bowl eligibility here in just a second. They're 6-5. They could be 7-5 if they beat Missouri. They're going to be 6-6 at worst going into the postseason. Kind of about where I think people thought that they'd be best case scenario this year, going into the Missouri game.
Yeah, I'd say it's about right there. There were some people who saw some people pick 8 wins, which I just didn't know how they got to that number. But
I mean, they could get 8 with a bowl, but
I mean 8 regular season. So those people, I mean, there were some people who erred on the side of a ton of optimism. There were some people who were on the side of, you know, a little more pessimistic with 4 or 5 wins, and then I think that most people kind of settled right around here. I think some people had this game at Missouri being the one to, we'll just get you to 6 wins. They are at 6 wins going into it, so now it's a game where it's, can you really enhance your bowl stock a little bit? But it is right around where I think a lot of people thought this season would go, so it's a matter of, are you one of the people that you aren't fine with meeting expectations? You always got to exceed them, or it's how people view the season of, like, and what expectations are.
Well, I'm a lifelong Cowboys fan, and so for years, you know, people, how do you think the Cowboys are going to do? I would say, well, they're either going to be 8-7 or 7-8 going into their last game. Like, I don't know how they're going to get to 8-8, but that's how, you know, they're going to be there going to that. And I kind of feel like that with Arkansas is that, you know, most years I kind of feel like they're probably going to be 5-6 or 6-5 or right there in that vicinity going into this Missouri game. And I mean, frankly, that's kind of how it's been. This is, you know, last year wasn't the case. If they would have taken care of business against Auburn, it would have been. But, you know, or you know, any number of other games. BYU comes to mind last year. But 2 years ago, they went to Columbia and they were 6-5. Mm-hmm. This year, they're going there and they're 6-5. And, you know, Bielema, he had a lot of years where they were right there at 6-5, you know, that type of record, playing Missouri. That's just kind of what the program has been like.
For sure. And that's what I'm saying. I think it's important to just kind of take a step out a little bit and look at what has been historically where the team's at, like within the past decade or so. And this is actually right on par, I feel like, for most years. I know a lot of people are frustrated about the way that they, you know, having bowl bound shirts is a little corny, in my opinion. It's like,
it looked like they had won an SEC championship. Yeah. The players came out after the game and they had on these white shirts that said bowl bound 24.
Yeah,
like, I've never seen that for becoming bowl eligible.
Like, I thought that was pretty corny, but like, as far as like Pittman's concerned, like, what do people expect him to do? Just be like, yeah, this stinks that we're going to a bowl game. Like, well, I mean, I think he said the right things. It's just people are still not going to be happy that this is kind of feeling like, you know, where Arkansas's found itself just way too often.
Well, and he had a good clip about this. Blake, play this. This is talking about how being bowl eligible is not Arkansas's only goal.
But to get bowl eligible, the locker room was excited, happy to be bowl eligible. Four of our first 5 years here was a lot of fun, and we got Larry out, and the kids had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, guys, that's not the goal of our football team. That's one of them, though. There's a lot of Power Four teams that are not bowl eligible after today and won't get bowl eligible, and some of them have to be in our league. So it is an accomplishment, not our ultimate goal.
You know, and I can speak firsthand. I know that going to these, you know, quote, second-tier bowls, that's not it doesn't go over well in that building. Not that they're not happy that they're getting two bowls. I think sometimes people see that Arkansas has got a, you know, 29-30 record under Pittman, and that they typically hover here around 500. I know firsthand that the expectation is for them to go to much bigger and better bowls. It's just a matter of they haven't gotten to that point, Blake.
So I think the perception of six wins changed when it went to a 12-game schedule, because when it was an 11-game schedule and you were 6-5, you had a positive winning percentage. Mm-hmm. Now you go 6-6 and you still get to a bowl. It's like you're just 500, but you get to play in the postseason. So 6-5 has a different feel than 6-6 to me anyway.
Yeah, and the other thing that happened whenever you're playing an 11-game schedule is that you were still playing the same number of conference games. They made it easier to get to a bowl game whenever they added that fourth non-conference game, because now you'll get to a non-conference by beating UAB and Louisiana Tech and Arkansas Pine Bluff.
That's why I think this weekend is so important for Arkansas, because if you beat Missouri and you're at 7-5, it just feels a lot different in my eyes.
Not just 7-5, but 4-4 in the SEC.
Yeah, exactly, which that's got to be like the tied for the best. And
I think in all of Arkansas's years in the SEC, I think they've only been 4-4 in the SEC or better.
I think
12 times.
Yeah, 12 or 13 is the number I saw.
This might be the 13th.
Yeah. And so I think that, yeah, if they win this weekend, it kind of changes the feeling of being a bowl eligible team. But if you do finish 6-6, you know, you look at this season and you still have empty trophy case in your games against Missouri, A&M, and LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard pill to swallow. And then you also have just there's not much you can do to justify the way that some of the home games went. And whenever it compounds over the years of just getting run out of your own building by mm-hmm. a couple teams. So the Ole Miss game is really what that game really changed the perception, I think, of the final half of the season, just the way they got handled there. So yeah, all that to say, I think people remember how games made them feel a lot of times, like mm-hmm. how seeing an empty stadium in the fourth quarter against Ole Miss, a border rival, made them feel. And that takes away from whatever accomplishment. You know, if you're looking at the season before ahead of time and you're saying, hey, getting to a bowl is like kind of what your expectation is for the Arkansas football program, like to get kind of back on track. I think that's what a lot of people did entering the year. They said they have to get back to a bowl game. But then you see the way that the season shakes out and you see the opportunities that they did have. It's hard to go back to what your preseason maybe expectations were whenever you saw what the opportunities they did have. There just were a lot of them squandered.
Okay, so speaking of bowls, I got a lot of thoughts on the bowls. I've been looking into this over the weekend, you know, what the selection process is like, what it looks like in the SEC. I got a lot of thoughts on that coming up. We want to tell you and get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Also want to tell you that if you are listening to our podcast, you can find a video version on YouTube. Just search Whole Hog Sports. Or if you're watching us and you're on the road this weekend, you want to listen to us on Apple or Spotify, you can search those platforms for Whole Hog Sports as well and find the audio version of our podcast. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we welcome you and we thank you. Okay, when we come back, lots of bowl talk. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life.
Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. I wonder if they can help you with your voice. I'm struggling today. This is three consecutive days I've been at games. I called a game Friday night, high school playoff game, and then I told you this the other day. We were at the Razorback game, and something about the way the wind was blowing, I was just totally windburned by the time we left there. And then we went to the Arkansas soccer game last night. They lost to Stanford in the Sweet 16 in penalties, but it was windy out there too. I'm struggling this morning.
Yeah, I'm struggling with the. Mine's a little bit different than you. Mine isn't weather related. I'm in the middle of a just going to games marathon. I'm on.
Oh yeah.
This is the fifth day of it. It started off a women's game last Thursday, a men's basketball game Friday, football Saturday, women's game Sunday. There's a men's basketball game tonight, and yep. I just feel like I'm ready for this marathon to be over and get one day to not be at game.
I'll be 4-for-4 after tonight. The Razorback men play Maryland Eastern Shore tonight. We'll talk about that with Anthony Christensen coming up, and we'll see. I mean, who knows where I end up tomorrow night.
Yeah, all I know is I need some sleep.
All right, so bowl games. Arkansas is one of 13 SEC teams that are bowl eligible. The weekend, it totally shook up everything from an SEC perspective. Not only did Alabama and Ole Miss end up basically dropping out of the playoff race, but the teams that beat them, Oklahoma and Florida, both got bowl eligible by doing it. Arkansas got bowl eligible as well. So there's 13 bowl-eligible SEC teams. There could be a 14th if Auburn upsets Alabama this weekend in the Iron Bowl. Neither Kentucky nor Mississippi State can win enough games to get to a bowl. So I have spent some time this weekend looking into the SEC bowl selection process, emailed the conference office, asked, hey, have things changed at all since there have been two new teams that have been added to the league? And long story short, no, they haven't. And so basically what you've got in the SEC right now is that you've got what I think there are four teams that could still make the playoff. A&M cannot be eliminated from playoff consideration, even though they got three losses, because they could beat Texas this weekend, and then they would get to go to the SEC championship game and play Georgia. And if they happen to beat Georgia at the SEC championship game, they get the automatic bid for the SEC to the playoff. And I think they would get a top four seed, which would be just pretty wild to think about that. But I don't think that's going to happen. But you can't eliminate them from the playoff conversation yet. Georgia feels like they've got a pretty good chance. Obviously, they're going to play in the championship game. Texas, they've got like their chances to get in. And then the big winner, I thought, from the SEC perspective over the weekend was Tennessee, who gets to see all this chaos going on in front of them after they beat up on UTEP early in the day. And now Tennessee, if they beat Vanderbilt, they can't go to the SEC championship game. They are mathematically eliminated from that, even though they've only got two losses, thanks to Arkansas. But if they beat Vanderbilt this weekend, they're in the playoff. I don't think there's any question about that. So you got three teams probably from the SEC that are going to end up in the playoff. And then what happens after that? Well, the Citrus Bowl gets to pick. Citrus Bowl, they're going to have probably to choose from Ole Miss, Alabama, and Texas A&M. They get to pick.
South Carolina, too, maybe.
Yeah, South Carolina, that's a good point. But I would guess they pick Ole Miss or Alabama. But anyway, the Citrus Bowl, they get the first pick after the playoff. And then you get the so-called pool of six bowls. Those are the Liberty, the Music City, the Gator, the ReliaQuest, which used to be the Outback, the Texas Bowl in Houston, and the Las Vegas Bowl. After those six are chosen, that's supposedly a collaborative process between the teams and the conference and the bowl representatives. After those six are chosen, the SEC also has tie-ins with the Birmingham Bowl and with the Gasparilla Bowl, which is played at the Buccaneers Stadium in Tampa. Okay, so let's say there's three playoff teams. Then you get the Citrus, the Group of Six, the Birmingham, and the Gasparilla. That's 12 bowl games. What happens to the 13th bowl team? Who is the 13th bowl team? That's one of the reasons I think Arkansas's game against Missouri this weekend is really important, because it's going to help Arkansas in the SEC pecking order when it comes time to pick this bowl game. If you end up at the end of the season and say, you know, Arkansas and Vanderbilt and Florida and Oklahoma are all 6-6.
Auburn could also get there and be a 14th
team. They could be a fly in the ointment. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how the SEC handles this. I'll tell you this. If I'm Arkansas and I'm at 6-6 and I'm trying to get, you know, two of three bowl spots between Florida and Oklahoma, I think I'd be a little bit worried because of their brand power. You know, these bowl games, attendance is important, but it's not as important as it used to be. The bowl games, it's all a big TV event now, and so it's about who can draw the most eyeballs. That's not to say I think Arkansas is going to be left out of a bowl game. I don't think they are. I think they're, you know, Missouri a few years ago, they didn't fit into any of the SEC bowl tie-ins, and they got sent to the Armed Forces Bowl where they lost to Army down in Fort Worth. But I will say what's different about this year than some of the past years is that going into the final week, there are, for 41 bowl games, so that's 82 bowl spots, there are 79 bowl-eligible teams, and there are 12 more that if they win this weekend, they would become bowl-eligible. I think there are going to be some teams that are bowl-eligible that are going to get left out. I don't think it's going to be a power conference team. I think they'll, you know, the marketability of power conference teams is going to get them into a bowl game. But, you know, if you're, say, 6-6 from a group of five conference, or, you know, maybe you're like Connecticut, who they're bowl-eligible, or maybe an Oregon State from what's left, what they call the two-pack conference right now, this bridge to the new Pac-12. I think that those types of teams ought to be a little bit concerned about, even if they got to a sixth win, would they be able to get into a bowl game?
Yeah, and I'm curious with just this over-concentration of teams that are bowl-eligible. I was looking at some projections, and I saw in the Alamo Bowl, BYU and Colorado, which that would be a Big 12
game.
Here's why.
Okay, so through next year, all of the games, because what happens in the bowl, I think it's 2-year, they all sign like 2 or 3 year agreements with conferences. And so all of these bowls that, you know, a year or so ago, they signed up with the Pac-12, they had no idea the Pac-12 was going away. Think about how fast that conference crumbled. And so what they're calling these, so any of these games that have got Pac-12 tie-ins, any of the so-called Pac-12 legacy teams, the teams like Oregon or Washington or Colorado or Utah who left the Pac-12 for another conference, they are still eligible to play in Pac-12 bowl games for the next 2 years. And so that could, as you know, to your point, it could create some instances where there were these old Pac-12 teams who might play one of their conference teams now.
Which it's funny, because if BYU and Colorado met, it would be a Big 12 power game. I mean, those are two teams.
It would be what a lot of people thought was going to be the Big 12 championship until the Big 12 went in just absolute chaos the last two, 3 weeks.
Exactly. So it just is an interesting dynamic. I definitely think that it's one of those instances where we are going to see some – we're going to see a lot of gripes about the bowl – about just bowl eligibility and stuff in general, I think, moving forward, just with this situation where there's going to be too many teams, some people don't have room in the end, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's what if they made it, you have to reach 7 wins, then would they have too few of teams? I don't know. It just seems like something's got to be done to avoid this type of situation.
Just for fun, Christina Long has written this on our website. These are some of the bowl projections that are out there right now. You got the Texas Bowl. Brett McMurphy from the Action Network says Texas Bowl against Baylor. Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN says Birmingham Bowl against North Carolina. Kyle Bonagura of ESPN says Liberty Bowl against Baylor. Jerry Palm of CBS Sports says Liberty Bowl against Kansas State. Eric Smith of USA Today says Texas Bowl versus Baylor. Brad Crawford of 24/7 Sports says Liberty Bowl against TCU. Bill Bender of the Sporting News says Armed Forces Bowl against West Virginia. That's what we're talking about, potentially in a non-SEC-affiliated bowl game. And then Steve Lassen of Athlon Sports says Birmingham Bowl against Memphis.
Yeah, and it's you're seeing a common theme here. I think we're seeing a little bit of Liberty Liberty Bowl kind of taking over again, which if that happens, I mean, I think Arkansas fans...
I would be a little surprised if they end up in the Liberty Bowl because they were there 2 years ago.
Yeah, but...
The Texas Bowl is interesting to me because they were supposed to go there the COVID year, and then TCU had the COVID outbreak and they didn't get to play that game. It's been 10 years since they've been to the Texas Bowl.
I think if you're ranking those three games and where Arkansas fans would be least to most excited about, least excited, Birmingham.
But again, this all, like these Liberty Bowl, Texas Bowl, those types of deals, it assumes Arkansas fits into that pool of six, and I'm not so sure they do now.
Yeah, exactly.
And I certainly don't think they do if they lose to Missouri.
Yeah, for sure. But out of the three that are getting tossed around, I think it goes Birmingham, Liberty, Texas in order of least to most favorable, I think, for Arkansas fans for just what would be most exciting. But it will be interesting because if they can beat Missouri, I think that they firmly fit in that six. They could finish in a tie.
But do they? Because even counting the playoff hopefuls, already before this last weekend games that are played, there's already nine teams with at least seven wins. Nine SEC teams already have at least seven. I wouldn't be surprised if OU beat LSU this weekend. That could get them to seven. Florida plays Florida State. That'll probably get them to seven. There could legitimately be 12 seven-win SEC teams that are basically, let's take the three playoff teams out, so nine at least seven-win SEC teams that would be competing for seven bowl bids.
I'm just curious how the Arkansas versus Missouri would go in the pecking order, because Missouri's played a lighter schedule and they'd have the same conference record with an Arkansas head-to-head.
But they'd have one more overall win.
Yeah, I guess if people really care about beating UMass and Murray State. Arkansas had its
Boston
cupcakes
College.
Too, but it was a little bit lighter. I think that the head-to-head there would probably help Arkansas out a ton. But who
again,
knows?
It goes back to ratings. Number one, what does the bowl want? Because a lot of times if you've got teams that have gone a long time between bowls, it's going to make them a little bit more appealing. So Arkansas to the Texas Bowl, like I said, it's been 10 years. It's been 20-plus years since they've gone to the Music City Bowl. I've always thought that Arkansas and Nashville would be a big draw. Just a matter of what do they want. And then you've got the TV component in here because, it's a made-for-TV event more than it is a – I think bowl games are more of a made-for-TV event now than they are a draw from the bowl to bring fans in or even a reward for the team for this type of season they had.
Yeah, if Arkansas gets to 500 in SEC play, they'll probably finish in like a tie for eighth or ninth place in the league. And at that point, you can split hairs if you want, but shouldn't complain too hard. You're right there in the part of the SEC pecking order where it's like you made a bowl and end of the day, if you really wanted a much better bowl, then win a couple more games. It'll be interesting to see how they handle it, but it's can't split hairs too much because at what point is it that important that you're fighting over the Liberty versus the Texas Bowl? It's both that tier bowl games.
Okay, before we get you out of here, real quick, just 1 minute analysis. Arkansas women's basketball beat Arkansas State 76-60 yesterday at Bud Walton Arena.
They needed it. if they lose to Oral Roberts by 21, then lose to Arkansas State back-to-back, that is...
And they were down at halftime.
At halftime, and then they started playing defense, which it's been a problem all year that they haven't played it. So they figured some defense out. It's actually pretty similar to what happened against Arkansas Little Rock, not as big of a deficit. But they needed that win. Had they not won that would have been hard to recover from.
So they play Oklahoma State and Daytona Beach this week. They go down there for a Thanksgiving week, two-game classic type deal, Oklahoma State. Is 5-0. Looks like a pretty good basketball
team.
They
have two common opponents. Arkansas lost to both that Oklahoma State beat.
Okay.
So,
Ethan, you can read all his coverage at wholehogsports.com. When we come back, Anthony Christensen will be here with me to talk about Razorback basketball. They beat Little Rock over the weekend. They play Maryland Eastern Shore tonight. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Razorback basketball beat Little Rock the other night at Bud Walton Arena. This is what John Calipari had to say after the game.
Because it became a close game, it ends up being good for us. Who's making plays? Who do you have to get out of the game? Who do you have in the game? What do you try to do to score offense? We passed the ball and moved it and did so much good offensively in the first half until the last 3 minutes. We had 7 wide open threes, missed all of those. 7. They were wide open. There was no one guarding the guy. Just missed. That happens. But they were the right shots, and they were the right place. Stuff happens in this sport. Sometimes you make 7 in a row. Sometimes you miss 7 in a row. What do you do from there? We were still, even with that, we were still up 18. So even the finish was just okay. But here's what happened. There was a will to win.
So Arkansas wins 79-67. Anthony Christensen with me now. Anthony, you're going to have to walk me through this. I did not see a lick of this game. I was busy watching an overtime high school playoff game Friday night. But I was obviously keeping up with the score. Arkansas's up by 18 at halftime. I think they're up by 22 at one point in the second half. So on one hand, it's kind of more of the same where they let a mid-major team hang with them, and they end up pulling away at home. But I think just in terms of me just tracking the score, it felt a little bit different because in a lot of these games, they've let the team hang with them for a good majority of the game, and then they pull away. Mm-hmm. This was a little bit different because Little Rock had the comeback in the second half.
Yeah. And I missed the first half because I was covering the Friday night soccer game as well.
The blind leading the blind here right now.
But, yeah, I mean, it is kind of like you mentioned. I mean, they got out to a really big lead early, played really well. I had the game on my laptop, so I did see, you know, parts of the first half as well. But got there for the second half, and then everybody made fun of me because apparently it was my fault that Little Rock got back into the game because I wasn't there for the first half. But, I mean, that's a good Little Rock team. I've mentioned it before. I mean, that's a team that is favored to win the Ohio Valley. So they're always going to go on a run at some point. And maybe if they had KK Robinson, maybe it doesn't get to that big of a deficit that early. But yeah, they went on a run, hit some nice shots, hit some tough shots as well. Before I think, Adu Thiro had a put back on a missed free throw that, kind of gave Arkansas some of the momentum that it needed to kind of pull away there at the end. But yeah, like you mentioned, kind of followed along the lines of some of these other games, like Pacific cut it down to a 2-point deficit at some point in the second half, and you know, Lipscomb had it down to I think 4-6 points in the second half. They were trailing against Troy at halftime before they obviously end up pulling away, and some of that, you know, comes down to not having, you know, Jonas Adu or Trevin Brazil available. Some of that is still kind of the team kind of learning to play with each other just because of, you know, it being this early in the season. Some teams gel quicker than others. And no alarm bells sounding yet, I would say. Though these are kind of, I guess, areas of concern if you're an Arkansas fan.
Thiro led Arkansas with 23 points in 29 minutes. Also had 8 rebounds, was real big at the free throw line, 9 of 10, but he also had 5 turnovers, so it was one of his worst games, if not his worst, in terms of taking care of the ball, but he also had 6 steals, so I guess he kind of he offset it a little bit. And then Boogie Fland ended up with 21 for Arkansas, also had 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 turnovers in 38 minutes. They get double-digit performances from DJ Wagner. He had 11 points. Vonimir Ivicic had 10 points. And once again, Arkansas was without Trevin Brazil and without Jonas Adu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so playing that shortened rotation, partially kind of by design, just because of the way John Calipari had recruited and said, you know, I really wanted to have just 8 or 9 guys for this rotation, which obviously that does run the risk of you know, having to play a shorter rotation whenever you do have you know, guys get injured or guys get into foul trouble and whatnot. And I wrote a little bit about this last night. Story was published this morning. Just kind of about how that has kind of affected things, maybe how that's maybe had an adverse effect just on, you know, these teams kind of hanging around, making it more of a game than maybe you would think it would be. Just because, I mean, you look at, I don't remember the exact examples I gave in that story, but Houston or Auburn, I mean, those teams are playing 8 or 9 deep.
Yeah, you mentioned Gonzaga.
Yeah, Gonzaga.
Baylor against Arkansas, yeah, Kentucky and Duke each other.
Yeah. So, I mean, these upper echelon teams, I mean, you're running 8-9-man rotations. Some teams playing 10-guy rotations, which that'll probably be shaved down a little bit as the season progresses. But you want to have, you know, a rotation that goes deeper than 7 guys just to not go into or not have this, I guess, fatigue factor that maybe the Arkansas has kind of had, which Adu Thiro did mention after the game. He felt it kind of factor into Little Rock getting back into it.
You know, the 3-point shooting hadn't really gotten a whole lot better. They were 7 of 24 the other night. But what I've been really impressed with this team is that, you know, overall shot quality has been pretty good. And, you know, I know this number will probably go down as they play teams that are bigger and lengthier and that they can play, you know, defense a little bit better. Maybe like in Illinois this weekend when they play them, or this week on Thursday when they play them in Kansas City. But they're shooting 49% right now this season. They shot 47% the other night against Little Rock. That's a number that I think Calipari's got to be pleased with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you mentioned the 3-point shooting. You do want to see that continue to get better. It did for a moment there. But it's kind of, I guess, kind of gone down to, I guess, the average, if you want to be mathematical. I'm not a math guy, but you do kind of want to see that. You want to see more efficiency in the offense. I think I mentioned in the story I wrote this morning that right now, out of the 16 SEC teams, their offense is the 15th most efficient. So you want to see that get better. And you know, kind of going on those scoring droughts allows for teams to kind of creep back into games. Even though their defense has been excellent to this point of the season relative to competition. I mean, it's been they're the 10th rated defense on KenPom. So, I mean, their defense has been very, very good. You do want to see them kind of cut down on turnovers and stuff like that. But the shot quality has been good. You don't really sit there watching a game thinking about their, you know, why are you taking that shot all that often? I mean, it happens in every game you watch. I mean, why are you taking that shot? But it's not something that's a huge concern with this Arkansas team right now. But, yeah, so their shot quality is good. You just want to see it be a little bit more efficient.
So,
some of that also will continue to come down to lack of availability for as long as those guys aren't available.
So Arkansas back on the floor tonight. They're going to play Maryland Eastern Shore. It's going to be a 7 o'clock tip-off.
Game
at Bud Walton Arena. The Razorbacks 4-1 overall. Obviously, Maryland Eastern Shore is 2-6 in their first season under a new head coach, Cleo Hill. Weren't they the team that had like a really late?
Yes, Cleo. I think Cleo Hill got hired either in June or July. I don't remember which. I think it was July
because this was a very bad team last year.
Yes, it was, and it's. I don't want to be disrespectful, but it's not looking that great early on, which is to be expected when you have a coaching change that late. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, you're not going to be able to have, you know, your recruiting period is just shrunk so much. Just you're just kind of picking up what's left behind by the rest of the portal. But you're looking at a team that, you know, is, I think, 359th in KenPom out of the 364 teams. And their two wins are against non-Division I teams. So if you're looking for a game to see Arkansas, you should see them put up some points in this one. But yeah, Cleo Hill had a lot of success at, you know, Winston-Salem State, I believe Division II. But yeah, very difficult situation at a job that already is kind of regarded as a very tough job to begin with. So yeah.
Arkansas is a 34.5 point favorite to win this game tonight. So that's a big line. big line for a Collins basketball game. Josh Haley will be on the call along with Manny Watkins. This will be on SEC Network Plus tonight. Second time that Arkansas and Maryland Eastern Shore have played. The first time was January 2nd, 2001.
It's another and game I remember like it was yesterday.
Okay, so here's a trivia question for you. Who was Arkansas's leading scorers in that game?
Oh, I should have looked at this when I put together the story.
They had co-leading scorers, and both players played in the NBA.
I mean, you're talking about a game. I was not even 3 years old.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Joe Johnson and Gennaro Pargo.
Okay. Yeah, I shouldn't.
Ethan backstage jumping around like he just won the Price is Right.
Joe Johnson should. I've got KenPom pulled up here. I should have just pulled that game up.
They both had 14 points in that game, and Arkansas beat Maryland Eastern Shore 100-40. Woof.
Tough one.
Yeah, tough. So doesn't look like things have gotten a whole lot better at Maryland Eastern Shore over the years.
No. Like I said, I mean, not an easy place to win. I'm not sure. I think they've got two 10-win seasons since then. Maybe more. It's not many. I forgot. In like 2015, they finished above 500.
So you're saying 10 wins is the bar? Like if they get above 10 wins, it's a good season for them.
They're throwing a parade.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Hey. So
yeah.
So you were at I was there too, at Razorback Field last night when the soccer season comes to an end with a loss to Stanford in penalty kicks. It was 1-1 after regulation, 20 minutes of overtime, no score, and then Stanford's goalkeeper just really showed out in the penalty kicks. Not only did she save a couple of Arkansas kicks, but then she had one of Stanford's makes of her own.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just kind of the way penalties go. I mean, you can't really, there's not a lot of analysis that you can put into a penalty shootout. It's just kind of the way it goes. It's the best way to win and the worst way to lose, I say, as somebody who's been on both sides of that. But yeah, I mean, it was an exceptional game of soccer just to watch. Two very talented teams kind of going at it. Yeah, like I said, like the worst way to lose, just, you know, speaking from my own experience.
Well, I don't know if Arkansas's players knew this, but what was being communicated throughout the crowd during the second half of the game was, hey, Mississippi State lost to Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. If Arkansas wins, they get to host an Elite Eight game. And now Stanford, by winning this, I guess they get to host Notre Dame in the Elite Eight this weekend.
Yes, yeah, that is correct. Yeah, that was the first time Mississippi State had conceded a goal at home all season.
Wow.
Just a weird, maybe not weird, but a fun little fact. But yeah, going back to Maryland Eastern Shore, I forgot about another above 500 season they had in 2023. But obviously a tough way to have your season end, especially a season that Arkansas had. Especially, I mean, you look at just the way they played, the way they, you know, really dominated a lot of games, not just in non-conference but in SEC play too. I mean, obviously Stanford is Stanford. Stanford's always been, you know, a power in men's and women's soccer. So it's obviously always going to be a good game when you're playing against a Stanford team. And like I said, it was, I mean, just sitting up there in the press box, just a spectacular game of soccer. I loved watching it. But yeah, just having been in those shoes, yeah, with losing in penalties, I mean, it sucks.
Stanford's, like you mentioned, they're a great program. They're trying to get to their 11th College Cup since 2008.
That's
they
not
were
bad.
There last year. Yeah. They were the national runner-up last year. They've mm-hmm. been a national champion as recently as 2019. They've won 3 national championships since 2011. This is a really good program. It's a team that's been in that situation. Arkansas is a team that's been in that situation too. But, you know, I mean, it's not like they lost to some, you know, upstart nobody. They lost to a really quality team. It's just unfortunate for Arkansas because I feel like this was a year, and they'll go back to the drawing board, and I'm sure they'll figure it out moving forward too. But this was a year where, you know, they've always been a team that's been so focused on being so tough defensively. That's just kind of always been their calling card. But this year they had the scoring to go with it. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were number one for a time this year. That's why they were a number two seed in the tournament. It's just unfortunate because this did feel like a team that could potentially get them to the College Cup. Just didn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that defense, it was spectacular still, too. I mean, and you're going to be returning some key pieces of that. Obviously, Keegan Smith in goal. Who had a spectacular game last night.
And she's just a freshman. She's going to be really good.
An early enrollee freshman, by the way. She turned 18, I think, midseason, which is kind of weird. I made fun of my brother, who is 19, saying that he's 2 years older than the freshman goalkeeper at Arkansas, which was kind of fun. Sorry, Landon. But then you've got Avery Wren, who is just kind of that anchor there at center back. I mean, Ella Riley. She'll be coming back. She's kind of a utility player who they can plug in a lot of different places. So, I mean, they're going to return a lot of key players from this team. That's just looking kind of defensively. I mean, you look at in midfield, I mean, Jalen Brownlee will be back. Cora Hare will be back. And then you've got, obviously, the attackers. I mean, Bella Field and Aya Robinson. I mean, they're going to be, you know, they're going to have a lot of players back from that team. A lot of really good players, a lot of players who have big roles this season. It'll be interesting to see how they kind of replace some of that production. I mean, you lose, you know, Ava Tankersley and, you know, Kate Doyle, Kylie Delaney, Kelsey Euler, players like that to eligibility with them graduating. And I'm sure if not most of those players will have professional careers now. In soccer, so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, Colby Hale and the staff kind of go about, you know, replacing those players. You know, do they trust freshmen like they did this year with, you know, players like Anaya Robinson and Keegan Smith, or do they go to the transfer portal like they did with, you know, Kate Doyle or Kelsey Euler? It'll be an interesting thing to monitor.
They're gonna be fine.
Yes.
They're going to be fine.
No, yeah, they'll continue to be one of the best teams.
As long as Colby Hale's at Arkansas, he's going to put a winning team on the field. Just unfortunate for the Razorbacks. They lose last night to Stanford in the Sweet 16 in penalty kicks. I have been corrected before. They didn't lose the game. It goes down as a tie.
It goes down as a draw, yes, but they don't advance.
But they lose in the penalty.
Of the shootout.
Yeah.
But as mentioned, the worst way to lose a game.
There's really no great way to do it, but it kind of, you know, like I was watching the overtime Auburn A&M game the other night, and it comes down to these 2-point tries, and it's like, mm-hmm. how do we play games on the field for, you know, 90 minutes, 60 minutes, 110 minutes, whatever the case is, whatever the sport is. I mean, it'd be kind of like, you know, you play basketball, and then after 2 overtimes, you go and you play like war. And that's how you end a basketball game. That's kind of what we do with the penalty kicks. It's kind of what we do in college football with this 2-point overtime format. It's just unfortunate, but, you know, they haven't found a better way to do it, I guess. So one of my least favorite sayings is, it is what it is. But we'll say that right here as it relates to the penalty kicks. We appreciate you being with us. Hope you'll visit us at wholehogsports.com throughout the day. Sam Pittman will speak to media today to preview the Arkansas-Missouri football game this weekend. Also, as we mentioned, Arkansas basketball tonight against Maryland Eastern Shore. We'll have plenty on our website.
Barn burner.
Throughout the day. And hope to see you there. Hope to see you tomorrow on our podcast as well. Until then, have a great day, everyone.